Tiger roll is remarkable. He comes up towards the winning line under Davy Russell to win his second round Ox Health Grand National. Tiger
Desert Orchid, what history being made. Roars of applause.
And towards the last flight of the champion hurdle, and it's Annie Power comes towards it now. She's about four lengths clear. This year she jumped it perfectly.
Hello again, welcome back. We're happy to have you aboard. It's week two of isolation, but we're not climbing the walls just yet. In fact, we're settling into life online, and we've got another jam-packed podcast for you. We're digging into the box of tricks with quizzes and challenges for Paddy and special guest Mr. Paul Nolan. Ruby relives former glories and not just the ones from the race course. Mr. Frank Hickey takes a week off, and we're joined by international racing expert Sean O'Sullivan to look ahead to the Florida Derby. And as always, it's all straight from the horse's mouth. Yes, it's from the horse's mouth, the best racing podcast on either side of the Irish Sea. I'm your host, Tom Nugent, and I'm joined, as much as the isolation will allow, by two racing luminaries, Ruby Walsh, ruler of many a racecourse, and Paddy Power, everybody's partner in punting. Good morning, lads. How are you?
Hello, Tom.
Morning, Tom. Everybody's partner in punting, Tom. Jesus.
Yeah. We were trying to come up with something, and that's what
I know. Some sort of alliteration. I know. Yeah. Tired in the isolation. I know. Yeah.
You're keeping well.
Keeping it together. Keeping the show on the road. You know, it's kind of went through the emotions this week of like last week, not sure whether to be happy or sad or where you are, but this week kind of going, you know what, we're all in the same boat, so you may as well have a bit of crack along the way. The only way you get through this is having a bit of crack, you know.
Ruby, are the children's bleep test scores improving as the days go by?
We've progressed the bleep test now to actual long distance running. The bleep test wasn't making them tired enough by nighttime, so we had to move on, create some more activity. I don't know, Tom, I think it's been, as Paddy says, weird, strange, different, but it's definitely been enjoyable being at home, and I think we're all starting to realise a little bit what we're missing out on.
Yeah, that's for sure. Everyone's slowing down a little bit, and as far as racing is concerned, well, obviously racing behind closed doors was fun while it lasted, but Irish racing, unfortunately, though entirely unsurprisingly, had to call things to a halt even before we made it to the Curragh this weekend, so no Irish National, and Punchestown is very much in the balance. It's a shame, but we sort of knew already, didn't we? Kind of maybe...
was fairly predictable. I mean, racing behind closed doors was trying to keep generating income for people as long as it could, but it was always going to stop. At some stage, it has stopped. But Tom, when's it going to start again? When is everything going to start again? I would say Punchestown is in the balance, is being kind to it. I think when you look around the world at how long it has taken other countries to come forward from the COVID-19, I think you're looking at June, maybe July, before sport as we know it starts going again, or probably normal life as we know it starts going again.
I'm going similar, Tom, with the speculation and all that. Like, so you don't really have a rashers, I guess, but you do get the feeling that this is going to get worse before it gets better, you know, so we're at the early stages of it. So, and you wonder, people are going to change a bit as well, like whether they want to be going to big events and like social gatherings and all that kind of stuff. Like, I think our behavior might change a bit, particularly in the short to medium term, which would be like a few months' time, because unless there's a cure or a vaccine for this yoke, it's probably not going away, you know?
Ruby, like, obviously, a lot, well, given the weather we're having, the National Hunt Ground proper is probably gone now, so a lot of the kind of more winter-type horses that would have been winding down anyway, maybe with one more run in mind in Aintree or Punchestown. What's the process there for getting them ready for their summer holidays? How do you kind of wind them down? Because it isn't just as simple as lashing them out into a field, sure it's not.
No, you can't just switch them off like a car. So they have to be trained down, do less and less with them per day, reduce back the type of feed they're getting to a less energy feed to relax the horse. And also, Tom, you got to wait on the weather. I mean, even though the weather is beautiful here by day, it is quite cold by night. So when you start putting horses out for their summer break out in paddocks, like 24 hours a day, it's too cold for that. And the grass hasn't grown enough yet. I know people are mowing their lawns and everyone is tidying up around the place, but the actual goodness isn't in the grass yet either. So that's still a couple of weeks away. I mean, May grass is usually the best grass. So you're talking all of April, these horses will be in training. They'll be doing less. They won't be getting trained to the same extent. They'll be doing a bit less, but I think they're a bit away from going in the field just yet. But as you said, they would have only had one, maybe two more runs. And I think by the time this resumes anyway, you're talking about June time, winter ground will be gone. No one's going to chance the best horses in that ground. So I think the national hunt season, it's over in England. I think it's as good as over in Ireland too.
Is that it? There's no chance that you're going to say, well, I want to have a go, and like the Galway plate's not going to have like Gold Cup horses in there, and like Galway's not going to become any bigger or anything like that. You're not going to say, well, we can try and keep taking over till August or whatever.
I don't think so. I think Galway will always be Galway. The weather will dictate that you're not going to run your best horses in Galway in the summer, and I think even moving Fairy House or a Punchestown style meeting to October, I don't think that'll work either. I think that'll have a detrimental effect on Fairy House and Punchestown come the following April and May. If you have horses tuned up for Grade 1 races in October, best of luck to any trainer that can keep them on the boil through Christmas, through the Dublin Racing Festival, through the Cheltenham Festival, and on to Fairy House and Punchestown again at the back end. So to me, this year's gone, Paddy. It's hard luck, but the worst thing's going to happen to people in the next couple of weeks.
Listen, if you're wondering what that kerfuffle is in the background, that's the sound of our guest Paul Nolan shuffling into the virtual studio thanks to his crack IT department, his son Barry. Paul?
Can you hear me, lads?
We can. Hey, Paul, how are you getting on?
Perfectly.
Good. All good.
How are you keeping?
All grand. Not a bother. Just sort of wondering how bored we're going to get in the next couple of weeks. But listen, all has to be done, and sure, hopefully we can get over it.
It's strange times, Paul. How are you doing with staff and all that kind of stuff? All good? Is everyone safe and well? Or
yeah, everything seems to be fine. I'd say all bar the pint of pint men are all going down the same road at the moment. We're all sort of leaving everything in, hoping that it's going to come back up when they say it is, and then maybe it'll come up. Maybe it'll be behind closed doors for a while because it worked before, but I don't know really. We've good enough owners, I suppose, to take a gamble on at least another month anyway. So we'll see what happens. I don't know. Maybe Ruby. Everyone's going to have different views. I don't think we know really. It all depends on how they're able to control it. It's probably going to get worse before it'll get better. But it's like everything. There's no point in, you know, we keep talking about racing that involves ourselves. But I think it's a more broad thing at the moment, and we're as well concentrate on keeping people healthy.
Very good. You're very kindly joined us on a summer afternoon, or some spring afternoon, morning, I should say, not summer afternoon.
Jeez, well done, Tom. You got the wrong season. It's a massive day. Well done.
That's a fucking disaster.
Those sheep are getting to your head, I'm telling you.
My head is all over the place. I'm too busy farming sheep, Paul, than to be kind of concentrating what I'm actually doing.
I know about sheep myself, Tom.
I know you do, and just hardship is all they are.
Can I ask one more question about racing season? Sorry, just for jumping ahead. Because I heard something the other day on Thurles last Saturday, or whatever they were talking about in the ITV studio about the flat season, because I mean, of the classics and the 3-year-olds and all this kind of stuff, whatever, and what happens there. And I just thought I had an amazing solution, but I was afraid to suggest it because it's probably ridiculously stupid, as most of my suggestions are. So I just wanted to like suggest it amongst friends so that you won't be too hard on me if it is ridiculous, right? So the 3-year-olds, right, they're going to miss the start of the season, probably miss the Guineas and possibly even the Derby and everything like that. So, you know, you can either pick them up and move them later in the season, but then the 3-year-olds never race against the older horses. So would you not just, like, maybe forget this season and next year have a Guinea for 3-year-olds and a Guinea for 4-year-olds? Does that make sense? And a Derby for 3-year-olds and a Derby for 4-year-olds. Would that be a sensible solution or ridiculous?
I think it could work.
Jesus, yes. There you go. So racing sorted anyway.
Could it work? Do you think people would kind of row in with that? Would the big powers on the flat that be kind of think?
I put it this way, Tom. By the time racing starts again, behind closed doors or in open public or whatever it is, we are going to have listened to far worse suggestions than that one.
That's like the greatest endorsement I've ever had from Ruby Wallace. I'm delighted with that. That's great. Thanks, Ruby.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power.
I'm not sure Paul's a busy man necessarily, but he's definitely got better things to do than this. So without further ado, let's get into the quiz. We're calling it Challenge Ruby. That's a working title. Better suggestions, welcome. And it'll go something like this. 3 questions each, one on racing, one on another sport, and one on general knowledge. the challenger will choose from two sets of questions, either the old course or the new course, and there's a tiebreaker in case of a dead heat. I've got high hopes for our first running of this race. Will he justify my confidence? Let's find out.
Hold on, you all know, no, he studies, he stays up till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning reading books and stuff like that. All I know is a small little bit about sheep.
would Ruby
ask,
be...
You know what to do, Tom? Ask a few sheep questions.
I know more about Boris Yaws than you think now.
give him, ask him what a border Leicester looks like.
It's a black head and a white body.
would Ruby be a bit of an intellectual, Paul, would he?
I'd say that tends to be. He reads too much for me, Tom. He was too fond of school.
very good. Right. Well, we're working under the working title of simply Challenge Ruby at the minute. Paul, you have a choice between would you like the old course or the new course of questions?
The old course or the new course? Jesus, I'm going to go with the old course.
Very good. Right. We'll start with you. So, first question. It's a racing related question.
Oh, God.
Which race course hosts the Florida Derby?
Oh, Jesus Christ. No, I'm not going to get it.
Do you want to have a stab?
No.
Okay.
Ruby, are you on Google there? We can see your phone.
Yeah,
no, Ruby. So Paul is on the old course. Ruby, you're on the new course. You ready?
Yep.
UK racing was suspended for 7 days at the beginning of March 2001 because of foot and mouth. Which race course hosted the first meeting after resumption?
I'm going to guess Newton Abbott.
Why would you say that now?
I can just remember the washers going in and out of Newton Abbott, the big tanks on the way in and the way out.
No, it was Lingfield.
Hmm.
Close, though.
Not really. I'd hate to be walking from Newton Abbott to Lingfield.
Paul, back to you. Oh, hang on. I didn't tell you where the Florida Derby is run. That'll be important later as well.
Goldstream Park.
Goldstream Park. Yes, Goldstream Park, of course, hosts the Florida Derby. Apologies, Paul. Second question, not racing related, but still sporting related. The Irish cricket team were forced to cancel their 10-day tour due to start on the 2nd of April. What would have been their destination? And a bit of a clue, they were due to play 3 2020s and 3 1-day internationals. So where were the Irish cricket team on the way to?
That's a massive clue.
What's the clue again there? Give me the clue again.
I don't really know if it's a clue, but anyway.
It's not.
It's glue. It's more glue than a clue.
Yeah. They were due to play 3 2020s and 3 1-day internationals. It's a hard question. You've been a cricket fan for years, I think. I will give you a clue. The country begins with a Z.
Zambia.
Zimbabwe. We're looking for not quite right. We could go blank here. Luckily you've only got 3 questions each and we've got a tie break. Ruby, sport. Which leading figure in English sport accepted an emergency pay cut on Thursday?
Oh. Last Thursday.
I know Thursday. The answer.
Leading figure in English sport accepted an emergency pay cut last Thursday. Oh, what's on? What's on? What was on? What was going to be on? I don't know. I don't know.
Can I have a guess?
It has to be an individual because otherwise it's a whole team. An individual sport. Chris Froome.
Eddie Jones, England Rugby Union manager. His pay was cut by more than 25%.
Mm.
Paul, how are you on music?
Made a little rough.
Right. Right, general knowledge. Glastonbury 2020 has already been cancelled. Why is it a significant year for the music festival?
Oh, God. Question. A significant year.
What is it? 100 years running or something?
Oh, close. 50. 50, oh, 50th anniversary. 50th anniversary. Well, not really close.
You're a huge crowd there in 1920.
You're only 100% away.
Yeah. They had good speakers then. Ruby, last question, general knowledge. This could be blank across the board if you don't get this, and it's actually
what a great success this quiz is. Bring
it back week on week. That's what I say. Ruby, whose first job after a very high-profile break will be as the narrator of a Disney documentary about the migration of elephants?
Steven Spielberg?
No, Meghan Markle.
You should have got that, Ruby, for God's sake.
Yeah, should have got that, yeah.
Ruby Walsh, the intellectual, 0 out of 3. Paul Nolan, the sheep farmer, 0 out of 3. So we go on. We've got a tiebreaker question.
What have we learned, Tom? The world is equal.
We've got a tiebreaker question to decide who wins this. Right. He wouldn't have been able to ride many handicaps at the time, but what weight was recorded for Elvis Presley at the time of his death? And the closest answer wins. You can give it to me in pounds, stones in pounds, or kilos. Preferably, you have to do the same. So that would just make life easier if you did the same.
But I'm going to say 20 stone.
20 stone. Ruby?
Do I go 20 stone and a pound or 19 stone 13? Is it under or over? I would say it has to be, I don't know how tall Elvis Presley was, that's the problem. I go 19 stone 13.
The correct answer was 18 stone 8. So Ruby Walsh has won. Paul, you know, technically you owe Ruby a 20 quid now. Thanks a million. Mind yourself and mind those sheep.
Good luck. See you, lads.
See you, Paul. Thanks.
Good luck.
Oh, God.
Oh, jeez, I was only stone out.
He's still there, Paul.
I'll be interested to see what he says about us now.
Oh, fucking hell. Right. Anyway.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power.
In just a moment, we'll be having the inaugural meeting of the all-new From the Horse's Mouth book club, and what a way to start. We all read chapter one of Ruby's autobiography this week, and it was annoyingly good. There are some cracking stories. More on that very, very soon. But before we do that, there's just time to put a smile on everyone's faces a bit. We've decided to pivot away from our usual feature, why the long face, flip it on its head, and ask the floor for reasons to be cheerful. Paddy Power, give us your reason to be cheerful this week.
I think there's lots of sentimental stuff, sentimental reasons to be cheerful, but I think bring it back to basics, the weather. The weather's been lovely, and that's made this isolation so much easier than if it was lashing rain outside, so I'm happy about the weather.
Happy about the weather. Very good. It is nice to get your vitamin D and a bit of sun in your back. Ruby?
Funny enough, Tom, I was going to say the very same thing. The weather has been so nice. It's been great to be able to play football outside with the kids. It's just so nice to be out, or so easy to be out and doing things. Now, I'm lucky. I live in the countryside. I don't know if people living in apartments and things like that, I'm sure it's quite difficult. But where I live, the weather has made this a hell of a lot easier.
Yeah, it's true. Makes life a lot easier. I know we're not necessarily a sentimental bunch at all, but the round of applause at 8 o'clock last night for the healthcare workers was a nice touch, and was very, very just kind of made me cheerful anyway a little bit. We'll also talk about another reason to be cheerful, of course, is the From the Horse's Mouth book club that we started this week. And we started with an absolute belter, just the really, really kind of just clever title, just Ruby Walsh, the autobiography.
So you obviously didn't even read the front cover.
No, just read the first chapter, didn't read the front cover. What's
it called? Ruby. Oh, Ruby. I even got Ruby Walsh. Yeah. You're really into this book club, aren't you?
I love it. I really love it. It's not like I've been forced to do it at all.
So it's Ruby. I thought we were meant to read a book called Rugby.
Oh, no.
Read the text.
It'd be more enjoyable, Paddy. It would have been more enjoyable.
Ruby obviously knows it well because he wrote it so diligently.
I'm starting to cringe here at thoughts of this.
Did you actually read it last night, Ruby, or did you just remember it because it's like kind of your life?
I'd say there's a fair chance, Paddy, I have the biggest collection of those books. I think there's a box of them somewhere here in the office as I look around. I'm not sure where they are. I think they're in that drawer over there.
Come here. So I paid $3.99 sterling on the Kindle for it. Is that how much did you get at the $3.99?
Absolutely nothing, Paddy. In my wisdom, I took the money up front.
Good man. Yeah. Judy. Would you have been better off, yeah?
I'd say I'm winning.
Okay. But after this now, after this great endorsement on this podcast, I tell you, it could be flying off the shelves.
No, I think you're setting me up for another one, are you?
No. I have to say, I did read the first chapter. A couple of things struck me about the first chapter. First of all, like obviously your name is the very first thing, but the fact that your whole family have had the same names for generations, I thought was kind of interesting and not that imaginative of your ancestors to keep calling people the same thing. And secondly, I thought that it was very interesting that your grand uncle or somebody was some mad, really good trainer in America.
Weird.
So it kind of, they say it's in the blood, but I always thought it was just environmentally. You just get thrown into it. That's how you're brought up, just around horses. But like, is there a natural?
Let me think about this. My great grandfather was, there's a word on it, he was a trooper. So what he did was he bought horses and sold horses, but they were all for the British Army for the First World War. So my grandfather and his brothers, that's how they would have started, buying horses all around Ireland, gathering them in Cork for the British Army to go to World War One. So they bought and sold horses. Obviously, when war times and things got tough, maybe four of my granduncles emigrated to the US. And Michael, who's the eldest, MG, he started training in America. And he ended up a Hall of Fame trainer in America. He was quite successful. I had a couple of other granduncles who went with him, Pat, I think, and Jim. And then my grandfather and my granduncle Ted both went to America in the late 50s, just after Dad and my Aunt Joan were born. I think Dad was 4, so Joan was probably 2. They went to America then out to work for Michael. And they spent a couple of years there before they
came home. Well to do. Like he was one of the first to make $1 million in 1964 or something like that. I mean, that's proper
In prize money. So he'd have been on a percentage of that. But no, I wouldn't have said well-to-do. They came from, they were workers. They knew how to work. They had a pub in Killarney. My grandfather and his brother Ted had a pub in Tremoy. And at the back of the pub, they had a yard. And my grandfather drove a taxi. He used to drive Vincent O'Brien, but Vincent O'Brien lived in Tremoy.
I don't know if you've ever spoken about this with your parents or your grandparents when they were still alive, but why America? Like, was America a good place to train national hunt horses at the time? Was there a few, was it just the case of there'd be more owners over there and a bit more money floating around?
Exactly. I don't obviously remember back then, but obviously in recessionary times and hard times, America was the promised land and a lot of people went there and there was more money and more affluence in America. And I suppose when you're dealing in racehorses, you need people with money to pay for them.
Despite the reviews, it's actually a good read.
Despite the reviews.
We've only read one chapter, Tom, to be fair. Give it a chance.
Come back to me next week with that same thought, Tom, will you?
Ruby, there's always talk about, like I've spoken to you about this loads of times, doing various bits and pieces, coming up to Cheltenham and that, but there was talk about your, like obviously when you were a kid and when you got into the horses and all that, running around on your ponies and two funny things actually. You said in the book that your dad, like when your granddad, who you sound, sounds like you're pretty close with when you were a kid, that when your dad bought you a pony for a grand And then your granddad asked, geez, that's a nice pony. How much does that cost? And your dad straight away said 500. And or he said a monkey, like 500, and looked at you and you kind of caught on there. Cause like you're all, and then your granddad kind of said, well, yeah, that's about as much as I'd pay for it now, you know? So there was that real typical you actually. It actually puts a lot into context when I read that. So you'd be always making sure that people think you got the best deal possible. Even if you didn't, you wouldn't let anyone know. You wouldn't show a sign of weakness like. And that, and then when I asked about, but also about then, that I can't remember the bloody name of the pony now. You had some your sister's pony was a bit of a head case, and you basically had a bad fall off it one day and don't remember coming back to the yard, but you're obviously concussed off your head and they have to take you off, and your parents would get brought back from down the country. But so like you've got kids living in the same kind of environment, and is that part and parcel of it? Are you kind of expecting to get falls off horses and all that all the time? And when you had it, like, was it normal?
Of course you are. But to answer your first question, there was a lesson in that, Paddy. Like, you always, everything costs you half what it really costs you. And if somebody asks you where you are, you're way closer than you actually are. If someone asks you, like, are you nearby? Yeah, I'm 2 minutes away. I mean, you're 10 minutes away. No one ever tells you the truth in those situations. What did that cost? They won't tell you half what they gave for it and how far away they are. They're going to make themselves closer than they actually are. There's a lesson in that one. That's in everyone's life. But no, the other pony was actually Ted's pony. My pony, he was grey. At the time, Desert Orca was all the rage. So very creatively, the pony was called Desi. But one afternoon after school, I used to go every afternoon with a man called Alan Fleming, who was actually a racehorse trainer. And we used to feed horses that were at the other end of Dad's farm in the winter. So we'd ride the ponies up, carry a bag of nuts and a bale of hay on each pony, feed the horses in the field, and then ride them all the way back. It was the quickest way of doing it. But on this particular afternoon, they were busy in the yard. Dad and Mum were gone south for some reason. And the head man in the yard sent me on my own with the nuts and the hay on the pony. So when I got to feed the horses in the field at the top of the farm and turned to come home, but we used to jump our way home. And obviously somewhere along the way, I can remember coming down the field to the first jump with a big drop at the back of it. And my next memory, I was in Ace Hospital. But I obviously got up and caught the pony, and I didn't ride him back because my feet were wet, so I must have walked him through the river on the way home, walked him into the yard, and the lad saw me coming in leading the pony, hadn't a clue where I was. My uncle-in-law, who lives next door, Liam Bradley, came, collected me, put me into the car to bring me to Ness Hospital. I remember going through the lights at the old cross in Johnstown, the traffic lights on the M7 or the N7 as it was then. I can remember being there all right, but Mum and Dad were gone south. No mobile phone, so my aunt rang Canaan's in Cashel. They had a shop in the middle of Cashel, and one of the women in the shop went out and waited on the street until Mum and Dad came through Cashel and stopped them to tell them that I was gone to Ness Hospital. So they turned around to Cashel and came back home. That was
such an Irish story.
Were they flagging down every car waiting to say, are you Ted Walsh?
There was traffic lights in the middle of the town in Cashel. So traffic used to crawl through Cashel. And Canaan's, it was Christy Canaan's daughter, actually, who would be...
So they would have known your parents anyway, sorry.
Yeah, they were Canaan. It was just Mick Canaan, that family. So they would have known. Dad rode for Christy Canaan, so they would have known Dad. So she waited on the street till Dad came driving down.
That's gas. So funny.
You got things done in the olden days, Tom.
And you said in the book that maybe not remembering it was good because you had no fear, or you don't remember. It's obviously sore. Getting concussed is sore, like, so.
I don't remember it. And I know there's all the stigma around concussion that there is now and the dangers of it, etc. But I always felt, and even as a jockey, like, obviously you do eventually forget pain, but pain does cloud your image of something. But when you get concussed, you simply can't remember the pain. So there was a plus side. If there is a plus, that was the only plus too.
Yeah, I know what you're trying. You have to be careful with how you say it, but I know what you're
saying. Yeah, I know. Nowadays you do. Yeah. Like, it was funny then, and even when I wrote that in 2010 or 2011, it was funny. Now you're going to have people saying, like, how can you say that about concussion? But look, I've had as many concussions as, not American footballers, nowhere near that, but I've had upwards of 10 concussions in my life, and I don't feel any side effects to it. So I wonder, is there more to the side effects of concussion than just the actual bang on the head?
What does that mean? That's deep.
It is, and that is a thought and a conversation, Paddy, when we were in private.
Okay, grand for a pint at some stage. We could download the House Party app, Ruby, and have a pint over the weekend.
That'll do, yeah.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power.
On this week's Racing Gold, it's almost 20 years to the day when father and son team Ted and Ruby Walsh completed a famous Grand National double.
Three out, Fox Chapel King, Comanche, Corda Gap to Northern Sound, Irish Light and Feathered Leader. As they run now towards the second last in the Irish National, Fox Chapel King from Comanche Court on the near side, saxophones being pulled up. Fox Chapel King, a mistake, Comanche Court lands just in front. Fox Chapel King in second and they're clear of Northern Sound as they race towards the final fence in the Irish National. Comanche Court from Fox Chapel King. At the last, Comanche Court is over the last from Fox Chapel King. Another mistake, and it's Comanche Court. It's going to be a national double for the Walshes as they race the line. Comanche Court, driven out by Ruby Walsh, wins the Pars Go Label Irish National.
For a brief period, Ruby, at that time, you must have thought this game was pretty easy.
That even now, Tom, kind of sends shivers down my spine is listening to it. It was an incredible period in my life, in all of my family's life. From Papillon and Ainsley to Comanche in Ferry House, and he obviously went on then and won the Gold Cup in Punchestown a fortnight later. But he'd run, his previous run had been in the Arkle. He got brought down in the Arkle in Cheltenham by Frozen Room at the second last. But from Ballyhack, with a mile and a quarter to go in the Irish Grand National, he was going to win. He was absolutely cantering. He was an incredible little horse. He jumped like a buck and he absolutely bolted in. And I was just, oh, it was an amazing time. And it's still probably one of the happiest times in my life.
So we'll come back to that a little bit. But talk to me about from an Arkle to an Irish National. Like, you must have had fair certainty that he was going to stay.
Yeah, Dad, and still to this day, trains very much the same way. He always believed that they'll either stay or they won't, but you should have the horses sharp and be able to travel and make them easier for you to ride. Like, he ran any second now in a 2 mile chase in Nace a few weeks ago as his prep for the English Grand National. He did the same with Comanche. He ran him in a 2 mile race before he was going to the Irish National. He just runs them over shorter distances to sharpen them up. So when they go back up to their long distance races, they find themselves going much slower and find it much easier. That's just always been a thought process of his. And I think he got it from watching Tom Draper as a kid. He'd watch Tom Draper with Arkle and Flying Boat, and they would school or over a mile and a half in Navan. And Tom Draper always said, it's easy going slow, make him do it going quick. And that was something that resonated with that.
Very interesting. Paddy, you remember those times well? That was kind of to complete for a trainer and jockey to complete the Irish and English National, even at that time, was a pretty big deal. I know it was different horses, but it's a serious deal, isn't it?
I remember I was working our North Strand shop for Papillon's National, and I remember just every single bet, like almost felt like every single bet we took that day was that's in Fairview in Dublin, but nearly every single bet it seemed to be on Papillon. I remember backing it myself for that reason, like just running around to, I think it might have been Fogarty's bookies up the road, and having a few quid on myself. But he was a bit of a gamble, I guess, that the kind of the Irish public really got behind him. Now the Comanche Corps for the Irish National, I think I backed Feathered Leader in the race. So I listened to the commentary there. I kind of have a memory of backing Feathered Leader, but I would have been, where I was working in shops at that stage. I would have been working at a shop. I can't remember where I was for that one, but I know it's definitely, I remember being there all thanks to Bloody Ruby, been there till about 9 o'clock that night settling bets, because there were so many fucking winners on Papillon in the North Strand. But when you just listen to it there, you kind of, I'm not going to say I'm jealous, but I'm delighted for you. And even the memory of it, like, because just, it must be like doing it for your dad. You said in the book, in the first chapter, how much like riding a winner for your, like, your old man, you bought your old man some list of his winners and he'd ridden for his father or for whatever. And was it for his dad or for whoever it was that he, like, it said it meant a lot to him. And then for you, the couple of big races you won from, it obviously means a lot more because the family connection and the joy of it and all that kind of, you know, it's just as, there's something exciting when people are cheering and roaring for you and you come home and you've done them proud. And like you said it before about days at Cheltenham, when you're carrying the pressure and you deliver, there's something really satisfying, I'd say, in that.
There was. I mean, if you think about it, like, Dad trained 25 horses and here he was in one period, in a 6 week period. He won the English National, the Irish National and the Punchestown Gold Cup. Only 25 horses in the yard, and to have the horses he had at that time, it was fairy tale stuff.
Was there ever a point, like, after, in the intervening days between Ainsley and Ferry House, where you kind of said, geez, yeah, like, Papillon was great, but wait till you see the horse we have ready for Fairy House. Like, was he worked, did you kind of fancy him a little bit?
Yeah, he worked on the Wednesday before on the Curragh, and the work he did was incredible. I mean, a really good lead horse at the time. The lead horse, the horse you'd use in a bit of work as a guide. And I remember riding Comanche in that bit of work. And I didn't, when I pulled up, I didn't have to say anything to Dad. It just, the look between us both, we both knew that if this stays, it'll bolt in.
And tell us, so Ruby, how do you, like, why is it that, so the stable's obviously just on fire in that period. Like, how does it, do you know the way you do, you see the stables generally, they just go through periods of just been, just everything's working. Is it just that everything's just fallen into place, or is it, why is one horse going well, so another horse goes well? It's just...
You say that, but if you think about it, they're all in the one routine. So when you get, especially with smaller yards, it comes in cycles. So they would all come in off grass on the 1st of July, and then the 20 or 25 of them would progress at the same speed rate, and they'll all be ready to run at the one time. And then at different periods of time, different yards have a cluster of horses ready to go. And you say, well, that yard's on fire. And then you say, oh, that yard's gone quiet. That yard's probably gone quiet because all the horses have won. And now they need to restock, probably either come down the handicap or find different races and go again. That's why they don't stay in form. It's not that they're in and out of form. It's just that they don't have enough of horses to be constantly hot. So you see it more so with the smaller yards going hot and cold. It's probably more noticeable with the big yards who should have enough of horses to be turning the wheel the whole time, that come in and out of form a bit more. But smaller yards just don't have enough horses to be hot to hold it.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power.
Okay, we've stood Frank Hickey down for the week and maybe for the foreseeable. It seems possibly a bit harsh considering what sage advice he gave you last Friday. Ruby and Paddy, they're gone as well because... we're going to look stateside, and realistically, they haven't got a clue about what's going on in America. But luckily enough, Mr. Sean O'Sullivan does. Paddy Power's international racing trader. Sean, how are you?
Good, Tom. Nice to step in for the lads. They deserve a break, to be fair, so hopefully get a few winners.
No, delighted to have you. And tell us, what's the kind of current racing situation in America? They're kind of keeping the show on the road for the time being?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of done on a state-by-state basis. So, unfortunately, some have gone, but some are keeping, as you said, the show on the road with some strict social distancing measures in place. So, hopefully that lasts now. Gives us something to have an interest in for the next couple of weeks, but we'll see how it goes.
Very good. One of those states, Sean, that's keeping the show on the road, as you said, is Florida. And there's quite a big meeting in Gulfstream Park on Saturday.
Yeah, it's the Florida Derby card. So, this is their best card of the year, I suppose. So they're obviously doing everything they can to keep the show on the road till then anyway. So I think there's 6 group races, a couple of listed races. So it's a proper good card now to sink the teeth into.
Yeah, we're going to have a look at a couple of them because, in fairness, it's not just kind of trying to get people to have a look at international racing for international racing's sake. It's actually quite high quality stuff. The Orchid Stakes is a grade 3 at 8.17. Sean, talk us through this one.
I think your likely favourite here is a 6 Mean Mary for Grey Motion. Should take all the beating. Has a lot of these held on form already. It's only raced 5 times, 3 from 5. And it's a very likable type, this filly, that she just seems to get on things from the front and, you know, go and make it. And these American jockeys just seem to be afraid of their hole sometimes on turf, and they seem to just hold up to overdo the exaggerated tactics. So this one's going to pop out. Shouldn't face any pace pressure. And got the same setup last time, the 25th of January. Was a 5-length winner then. And pretty similar race to this, so a repeat of that effort should really suffice here. I think she's a good thing.
A good thing, so says Sean O'Sullivan. 8.49 is the Fezzik Tipton Gulfstream Park Oaks. Sean, a couple of decent fillies in this. I see Lake Avenue is all right as a 2-year-old. Talk us through it.
Yeah, she came back though on the 7th of March and ran quite disappointingly up at Aqueduct. Was set off odds on, was beaten 9 lengths, but you definitely wouldn't write her off yet, especially a Bill Mott trained horse. They tend to need to run sometimes. But for me, I think it revolves around the rematch of the trial for this on the 29th of February between Spice is Nice and Toneless Shape. That was ran over a mile, and Toneless Shape basically got the setup of all setups. It got to set a pretty sedate pace and just kick on using her speed. This is over half a furlong further, and it's over 2 turns, which will bring stamina into play more. Spice is Nice is only making her second start on that occasion, so I still think she has more she has more to come, and she'll definitely be more suited to this test of stamina than Tonalish shape. So I think Spice is nice, can overturn the form here and punch your ticket for the Kentucky Oaks for, well, September now, whenever it's going to be.
Very good. 9:26 is the Kitten's Joy Pan American Stakes at Grade 2. And Sean, mile and a half for open company, and a good few older horses here, people who kind of have been watching American racing over the years will recognize a few names, Prince of Arabia and Zulu Alpha being a couple.
Yeah, it's a similar, it's the same old suspects, as you said, and the staying division in American turf racing isn't that strong. And again, not going to be too original here, but Zulu Alpha should really just account for these quite easily. Two stars to go over, a trip too short, won the Pegasus World Cup Invitational, beat Magic Wand, kicked her out of the way in the straight, even though she seemed to get her own way in front. That was a massive effort, backed it up sent over a mile and 3/8 back here. 4 from 5 around Gulfstream. It's just really hard to oppose. If it's entered around the even money mark, we'd look a bet on that. Again, yeah, it's pretty hard to put up anything against it. The form is just so superior to the rest of us.
Very good. We'll move on. 10 o'clock at Gulfstream is the Appleton Stakes, Grade 3 over a mile on the turf for older horses. Anything here to keep an eye out for?
Yeah, these are all rubbish, to be honest with you. It's one of these fields that you run the race 10 times, you probably get 8 different winners. It's just who's going to get the best trip. The one that could just be a step above them, but it's pretty hampered by the draw, is the 12 El Tormenta. So it's been off the track since running 6 in the Breeders' Cup Mile. It was a really good run. It was up the whole of the likes of Without Parole and Circus Maximus. So that kind of form really stands out in this context. It was a winner of the Woodbine Mile to start before that. So it's a short run to the bend. If Leperu can be alive at the gates, get it out and get a position, I think that could be the one that's a class above what is an ordinary looking bunch for the grade, to be honest.
Very good. And the final race on the card at Gulfstream Park on Saturday is 10:36. Is the Curlin Florida Derby. Winning your in for the Kentucky Derby, obviously. And yep. Talk us through this one, Sean. A couple of promising types in here, but still a few bubbles waiting to be burst as well, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. Your definite favourite is going to be the shape of number 7, Tis the Law. It's currently the favourite for the Kentucky Derby in most future books. Was a really impressive winner of the trial for this. Kicked the reopposing East Indian out of the way. That one's come out since and won another trial quite impressively. So that one should take all the beating, but it's not going to be much of a price. And it's going to be a full field of 12, a short run to the bend. There's a lot that can go wrong here. There's a few rubbish horses in here that can just get in the way. So at the price, I'd say just maybe look elsewhere. As I said, East Indian was an impressive winner last time out, but is strictly held by Tis the Law. So Independence Hall is the other one that had his bubble burst the last time in Tampa. That was 3 from 3 and looking like a Derby horse, but was kicked out of the way in the straight. So the one I'm going to side with here is Governor Morris for Todd Pletcher and Johnny Velasquez. So this one's only had 3 starts. It's 2 from 3. Its only defeat came to a really promising looking horse in the shape of Maxfield. I think Maxfield would have went really close in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, only it got injured. So that one hasn't really done much wrong. It's going to be hopefully around an each way price. So if there's one to take on the hot pot with, it would definitely be number 5, Governor Morris for me.
Governor Morris against the top of the market for Sean O'Sullivan in the Florida Derby. Sean, best bet in Gulfstream Park on Saturday?
Best bet is Me and Mary to make all and not see another rival. Not very original, but I think it's the most likely winner.
Lovely stuff. Sean O'Sullivan, mind yourself. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Sam. Bye-bye.
There you go. Very good. Quickly before we go, Ruby, one or two questions just on social media. Mike Stocker asks, what's the best feeling a horse has ever given you? So you were talking about Comanche Court earlier, a bit of work, a nice bit of work. Is there any particular standout memory that kind of you pulled up either in a race or sitting on them for the first time to go, whoa, this is pretty
good? No, definitely. Carlo Starr in Newbury. Novice chase. He beat Locksmith and Foreman in Newbury the end of December. Could even have been Shallow Hurdle there, although I stand to be corrected on that off the top of my head, but riding him that day thinking this is a fairly hot contest, going to Newbury to ride a 4-year-old in the chase for Paul Nicholas that I didn't know anything about and what he did. But I remember thinking that day, whoa, this is a bit different.
Paddy, Liam Brennan asks, what's your favourite type of biscuit and what kind of is your overriding emotion when a rich tea breaks and falls to the bottom of the cup of tea?
I'm not a huge fan of dipping.
Oh, controversial.
Yeah, I'm not a biscuit dipper. Yeah.
Ruby dip or no dip?
I don't eat biscuits.
Don't eat biscuits, okay. Classic. Go on, I need
I'd be, and I wouldn't eat many biscuits. I have done in the past now. I've been partial to a biscuit or two.
Tom, this is a new Paddy. Cranberry juice and mental health books, and you're asking
apple,
about biscuits.
Apple cider vinegar, you name it.
Come on, Liam Brennan. This is the new Paddy Power we're talking about.
I'll go for a digestive because they're nice.
Can you sing the song?
That is so boring.
What's the song?
McVitie's Digestives, like they ought to be.
Jeez, I don't know that one. Sing it again.
I think everyone's losing it was in the ad, a little bit. And that's all we've got on questions this week.
So that's all we've got time for this week. My thanks to our guest and top flight shepherd, Paul Nolan. Thanks to international racing expert, Mr. Sean O'Sullivan. Thanks to author, Ruby Walsh, optimist, Paddy Power. But most of all, thanks a million to you for listening. Despite the lockdown and lack of racing in the UK and Ireland, we'll still be here every Friday, talking rubbish and having a laugh. If you've already completed Netflix, Hulu and Amazon Prime, keep an eye out on our Twitter feed for some lovely content with Ruby and Paddy called Racing Icons. That's all from me. Good luck.
From the Horse's Mouth is a Muddy Knees Media production for Paddy Power.